This episode is brought to you by CLA.
Here's your money briefing for Monday, January 9th. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. The new year began with several days of gains in the stock market, but the wounds suffered by people's portfolios and 401k accounts last year are still fresh.
You know, we're in a strange situation where buying risk assets following a sell-off, which is a wonderful strategy to follow historically, is a little bit more uncertain.
So what can investors expect in 2023? Sebastian Page, Chief Investment Officer at T. Rowe Price, will join us with a look ahead after the break.
When it comes to planning for the future, taxes and wealth advisory tend to be viewed as two separate conversations, but some things are just better together. That's why at Clifton Larson Allen, they call it TWELF. Here's Clayton Bland, Chief Wealth Advisory Officer at CLA.
More often than not, all of the decision-making around the tax relationship are predicated on things that have happened in the past. An investment advisory relationship would be something that's looking at, hey, what are your future goals? How can we allocate capital to help you achieve those goals? So when we talk about 12, tax and wealth together, that's really what we provide at CLA with that combination of both professionals. It provides for the necessary information to make the decision that will have the best impact on you, both from a goal standpoint of my portfolio and also from a tax consequence standpoint of when I file my tax return.
Visit CLAconnect.com for more insights from Clifton Larson Allen. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Investment advisory services are offered through Clifton Larson Allen Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Member FINRA, SIPC.
If you've got a stock portfolio or 401k, you were probably happy to see 2022 come to a close. So after a bruising year in the markets, what can we expect in the first part of 2023? Let's bring in Sebastian Page, Chief Investment Officer at T. Rowe Price. Sebastian, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, JR. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, Sebastian, if you've got money in the market, 2022 was not for the faint of heart. It was just about this time last year we saw indexes hitting record highs. And then by the end of the year, the S&P 500 had fallen 19%. What changed the complexion of the market so significantly?
2022 was a crazy year in capital markets. You know, if you think about regime shifts, it was a major regime shift. And what drove the drop in the S&P 500 and the drop in bonds mainly was a rate shock. The Fed brought rates from near zero to 450 basis points in about 9 months. And that really shook markets, and that was not expected. Now, you mentioned stocks were down 19%. That's pretty bad. Worst stock market since the global financial crisis. But for bonds, the aggregate index was down 11%. That is horrible. That in 2022 is the worst year for bonds basically in history that we can get.
Yeah, you know, we've seen inflation tick lower in recent months, but it's still at levels not seen in several decades, and that spooks the market. What's your take on where inflation is headed in 2023?
I think inflation has peaked. It will be sticky on the way down. My guess is we end the year at about 4% inflation looking back for 2023. And there are many factors in here, but goods prices are coming down. Commodities are hard to predict, but services, when you look at the housing component, are definitely coming down. Now, this is a bit technical, but we're going to have a problem because we're forecasting housing prices to be down 7% this year, but we're also forecasting that shelter inflation is actually going to be up 5%. And that's because shelter inflation is based on rents, which renew only once a year, and there are other lags in the data. So that's a bit complicated. But for all your listeners watching inflation numbers, this is going to actually keep inflation a bit sticky, but it's kind of artificial.
And whenever we talk about the effects of inflation, it leads to speculation about economic weakness. How likely is it that we could see the economy fall into recession? And how should investors plan for that?
If I look at how we're positioned tactically in our portfolios, we're still defensive. JR, I'm a reluctant bear. I don't like being bearish when markets are already down by so much and we've already priced in a big rate shock. The problem is what we were just talking about, the recession risks rising. Stocks are more expensive now than they were at the beginning of 2022 if you adjust for the level of rates. And earnings expectations are positive for this year. So if we're going to get a recession, you know, you would get a drop historically in earnings of 10, 15%. The forecast is for earnings to be up 4%. So all that considered, we're actually underweight stocks. And we're actually back to neutral on bonds. Because if we're going from inflation risk, which is bad for bonds, to growth risk, then bonds and treasuries can reassert themselves as a diversifier of risk in the portfolio.
You know, the markets reacted sharply to the Federal Reserve's interest rate increases, especially the unexpected ones. But Fed Chairman Jerome Powell has telegraphed that the Fed will continue raising rates throughout 2023. And so with that already on the table, can we expect the market's reaction to be any different?
Yeah, that's a really good question, right? Because, look, the rate shock is mostly behind us, and the rest is priced in up to about 5% Fed funds rate. So markets should now be less sensitive to the Fed. I mean, we're all obsessed with the Fed, too much in my opinion. But 2023 should be a year where there's less sensitivity to inflation, as we said earlier, and to the Fed relative to 2022. It's not like those risks are going away. The important thing, JR, is that markets expect a pivot from the Fed in the second half of 2023. If you look at how Fed fund futures are pricing interest rates, I'm not really. I think we get to five and we probably stay there for a while. And the reason is that unemployment data is just still so strong. The bottom line is we are unwinding massive COVID distortions in the economy. And that includes a remarkably strong employment picture. It includes 10 million still unfilled job openings.
Now let's talk about stock sectors for a moment. We've seen tech stocks struggle over the past 6 months, and some of the bigger names have fallen as much as 60%. But which sectors do you see doing well in the first part of the year?
You kind of have to look at the difference between tech stocks that are highly speculative, that don't generate profits right now, that are more like story type of stocks, and then the mega cap techs. It's almost like two different sectors within tech. Generally speaking, I think that we continue to be in an environment for a while where cash flows matter because of interest rate uncertainty. And if you're a company that has, you know, you're promising to make a lot of profits, but like a decade from now, you're super innovative, right? Well, the way markets work is once you start discounting those profits really far into the future, the value of a company goes down. So you need balance between value and growth, but you still need to have perhaps a quality bias in both.
Somewhere else could people look, you know, maybe outside of stocks?
If I'm an investor looking to rethink how I look at growth stocks and other alternatives, I think bonds and high yield bonds included as part of a diversified portfolio look interesting for 2023. And then one more thing I'll say, JR, like small caps, quality small caps, like the S&P 600 types of small caps are really pricing in a really deep recession if you look at their valuation relative to large caps. So I think that's another opportunity for those willing to add a little bit of octane in the portfolio. Yeah, it's actually nowadays as easy to invest in bonds as it is to invest in stocks. You have ETFs, mutual funds, and so on. It really is not that complicated. Look at the yield, talk to an advisor, and you know, now's the time to increase your diversification.
And looking overseas, what international events should people with investments have their eye on?
You know, Eurasia Group has an interesting list of the top 10 risks that are coming for the year ahead. One and two, they have Russia and China. They call it rogue Russia in their top risk. And then just the amount of power that Xi Jinping has accumulated in China as the second top risk could be destabilizing for the world and for the economy. And we got to watch the China reopening as well. Then I would add an energy crunch. You know, we talked about inflation earlier, and I said commodities are difficult to predict. There's a lot of uncertainty on where energy prices are going, especially with China reopening.
You know, Sebastian, jittery markets could cause investors to have their fingers ready to hit the sell button. How should they approach this market?
I would always say two things, and it's very trite, but it actually applies to the current market environment more than usual. I would say stay invested and stay diversified. You know, we're in a strange situation where buying risk assets following a sell-off, which is a wonderful strategy to follow historically, is a little bit more uncertain than it's been. The buying the dip, it's a regime shift towards higher rates. We're unwinding COVID distortions. So stay invested, stay diversified. I think in particular at the beginning of 2023.
All right, that's T. Rowe Price Chief Investment Officer Sebastian Page. Sebastian, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal.
This episode is brought to you by CLA.